Before we get to our text today, I need to give you a little background as to what is happening in the Gospel of Matthew. We're going to be reading from the Gospel of Matthew, but this text in Matthew that we're going to read is one of the more disturbing texts in our Gospels. The Jews and the Gentiles, they didn't get along very well. There was some serious hatred going on, and Canaanites were particularly despised by the Jewish people. But the Jews were despised by the Canaanites, too. There's plenty of hate to go around, really. There were differences in the group. There were differences in heritage. There were differences in religion. And there were differences in race. And that was the main motivating factor why these two groups could not get along, is because there were racial tensions. And that's putting it lightly. They really did not like one another. And there were favorite racial slurs. There were racial slurs back then. The favorite racial slur to call a Canaanite from a Jewish person is to call that person a dog. So that had some serious negative racial connotations. It was a racially charged word with pretty awful connotations. So with that, let us read our text in Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 through 28. Jesus left that place and went away to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Just then, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." He answered, "It's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed instantly. May God add a blessing to the reading of the Holy Scriptures. Will you pray with me? Lord God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Good morning. It is good to be here today. What happens? What happens when our expectations are not met? On Monday of this past week, of course, the eclipse. The eclipse held the attention of the entire nation as we talked about, you know, what it would mean for the moon to pass in front of the sun. It was a huge buildup, captivated the attention of millions of people. I must admit that I woke up on Monday morning with a little bit of excitement. I wanted to see what this was all going to be about. I was excited to experience this. And of course, in Tulsa, 90% of the sun was going to be covered. I thought, wow, that's awesome. This is going to be really, really good. And our target point was 1:08, right? 1:08 p.m. is when we had when 90% of the sun was going to be blocked for us. It wasn't totality, but it was the most we were going to get, right? So, of course, at like 1:06, I go outside, and I've got the glasses, and so I'm able to see some things, but I go outside, experience what I thought was going to be like this religious experience or something. I don't know. I was figuring it was going to be this massive, wild thing, but when it actually happened, I thought, I don't know. Did you guys experience that as well? That I was expecting this dark experience where I look up, you know, and it's covered in darkness for a couple minutes and everybody takes a breath. That's not exactly what happened. And if you got to miss the eclipse, if you had to be inside or something and you didn't get to experience what 1:08 looked like on the lawn of 91st and Mingo, let me give you a little indication of what that looked like. That's it. It's another eclipse right here. I mean, it was crazy. My expectations were definitely not met on that day. You know what else? You know what else I do not expect? I do not expect to see hate groups marching on TV in 2017 proclaiming one race superior to another. I do not expect to see that. If you will allow me, I'd like to take you through my journey of these past couple weeks and my thoughts as it relates to the demonstration in Charlottesville, Virginia. We had this march by these people with torches and Nazi salutes and visceral hatred. I mean, it was awful to watch. I know you guys were seeing it too. It was awful to see this unfolding in this year and in this time. And my Facebook feed is filled with a lot of ministers and filled with a lot of religious things. So my Facebook feed was exploding with comments like, we need to denounce this kind of behavior. We need to stand up and say, no, this is not what we are. And if your preacher does not call out racism on this Sunday, you need to leave that church because your soul is in danger. Let's have the courage to call out this evil. That's what I was reading over and over again. And all I could think of was, how is that courageous? Like, how is it courageous for me to stand up and call a hate group a hate group? Because let me tell you why I thought that. Every single media outlet or reporter or social media or print media and everyone that I spoke with, everyone was on the same page. This was wrong. From Fox News to CNN, everyone was saying, this is not a good idea. Nazis have no place here. Everyone was saying those words. And so I thought it also, so I wondered how courageous it is to just echo what every single other person was saying as well. I also thought it let us off the hook. It let us have a scapegoat. By being able to point to this radicalized psycho group and naming that as racism while not dealing with our participation in racism, however minor that might be, it allowed us to say, look, that's racism. I guess I'm okay. As long as I don't carry torches and salute like a Nazi, I guess I am okay and I am not the problem. So my minister friend Bob, who I've referenced up here, several times. He's a Presbyterian minister in Oregon. He was telling me a few days after the events in Charlottesville, Virginia, that he was going to a peaceful rally to stand with those hurt by the Charlottesville protest. And I told him what I just told you. I don't get it, Bob. I don't understand why you're protesting something that every single person out here says this is wrong. Why are you standing up for something that everyone agrees is not good? So later that night, he calls me. What happens when expectations are not met? He calls me and he says that he was with about 40 people at this little rally, and they were holding up signs that talked about love versus hate. That's the only thing the sign said. We choose love. Love wins. In fact, that's what Bob had on his sign. He had a sign that simply said love wins. Who in the world would be offended by that? Who would be angry by that? But there was a man. There was a man that approached the group and began shouting awful things at this group that was simply standing on the side of love. And he was shouting these awful, horrible things at this group. Black people have no place in our new America. All the Mexicans should go back to Mexico. Here's my favorite. The white man is better. That's what he's hearing. And signs that simply said, I choose love over hate. We get this visceral, psychotic reaction. So he's walking forward and Bob steps in between him and the group, saying nothing, just holding up his sign and making sure that this man's not going to go any further into the group, but not antagonizing him, not calling him out, simply standing there with his sign. The guy walks right up to Bob, spits in his face, then started saluting as a Nazi. It's crazy. It's crazy to think that that kind of mentality is still out there. All because he was holding a sign that says love wins. I asked if there were other people that came. And he said plenty of people stopped and honked and waved and said, you know, well done. And shouted things like, we stand with you. But he said there were several others that drove by and gave them the middle finger. Or shouted things that were awful at them. It's crazy for me. And yet there are others. There are other people who are not interested in peaceful resolutions. I don't know if you followed this story or not, but two Orlando area police officers last week were shot and killed by a suspect who had placed on his Facebook feed that it was time to shoot back. Of course, he is referencing the black men that have been killed by police recently, at least in the news. And the officers, who were both black, by the way, approached the suspect with caution. Why? Because the officers didn't know if he had a weapon or not. And they weren't going to shoot first. And the suspect turned and killed both of them on the spot. How can this be? How can this be that it's like this right now? Is it getting worse? Or are we simply realizing how bad it's always been? And that leads me to our text today in Matthew. This is clearly not my favorite Bible passage. But it's up in the lectionary. It was actually in the lectionary last week, and I wanted so much to preach on it. We had our music Sunday last week, so I wanted to give this some audience. A Canaanite woman whose daughter is clearly in need of healing approaches Jesus. And remember, Canaanites and Jews, they didn't mix. Jesus ignores her. She persists so much that the disciples tell Jesus to send her away. Now listen to what the disciples did. The disciples didn't say, "Hey, master, you might not have heard her, but she's bothering us. Might you help this woman?" They didn't say that. They didn't say, "Hey, master, could you talk to this woman, please? She's bothering us." No. And they certainly didn't say, "Jesus, heal the daughter already so we can be done with this." They said, "Send her away because now she's bothering us." Then Jesus states very plainly, he's not here for her. He's here for the lost sheep of Israel. His mission is only for Israel. She falls on her knees and begs him to help. And at this point, Jesus doubled down on what he says. And so Jesus insinuates that she and her daughter are dogs. It's not okay. This is not okay. And quite frankly, this is not the Jesus that I know. I'm sure it's not the Jesus you know either. And we can argue about whether he said this or whether he did this. We certainly don't know. But it's painful to read. And it's in our holy book, so we have to deal with it. Now, there are a couple explanations that do not even pass mustard. They don't hold water. But they're trying to soften what Jesus says. A couple commentaries that I read said, well, maybe Jesus wasn't calling her a dog. Maybe it's like a little puppy. Maybe a cute little puppy. No, that's not it. Another favorite one is maybe Jesus was testing her. Maybe Jesus was testing her by hurling racial insults at her so she would to see how strong her faith is. That's even more sick. I don't think that holds water at all. But again, it's in our holy book. And to be fair, we are the ones having a problem with this. Matthew's audience would not have had a problem with this up until now. Matthew's audience was mostly Jewish, if not all Jewish. Remember, Matthew's writing to his audience. Matthew isn't writing to Forest Park 2,000 years later. Matthew is writing for his audience. They would have had no issue with the exchange. Jesus was reacting like a typical Jewish male would have reacted to this woman. My problem is, I need Jesus to be better than the typical Jewish male. Now, up till now, Matthew's audience would have expected the woman to yell a racial slur back and leave, okay? It would have been very acceptable for her to say, fine, who needs you with that attitude anyway? But what happens when expectations are not met? She can't afford to walk away. Her daughter's health was at stake. She can't afford to walk away. So she begged him again. And what did Jesus do? He took a step back and listened to her. He took a step back and said, maybe I've got it wrong here. Maybe you do have a valid point. This woman, this persistent woman that had everything to lose, came to Jesus and got the Son of God to step back and reevaluate his own cultural understanding. If Jesus is willing to hear another perspective and another voice that does not line up with his, we must do the same. We have to do the same. I don't know if it's a learned behavior or if it's innate, but we all have the proclivity to consider our normal as the normal. Let me say that again. we think that the experiences and the reactions to the experiences that happen to us are not only our normal, it should be the normal for everyone else. We have a hard time seeing another worldview apart from our own. We get comments like, I don't know why they are getting offended. I wouldn't get offended by that. What's wrong with them? Or we hear, why do they have to provoke anyone? Why is it that people have to provoke? I wouldn't do something like that. Therefore, they shouldn't do something like that. But Jesus did not do that. Jesus dared to take a step back from the way he was taught, because he was raised in a very Jewish setting, and he was raised to see the other. He was raised to see those Canaanites as nothing but dogs. And he was willing to step back and go, maybe that's not right. Maybe this woman does, in fact, have a point. And right here, mark my words, right here is a turning point in Matthew's gospel. Because Jesus, right here, after this exchange, Jesus starts to broaden his mission. Jesus doesn't have the idea that he's only here for Israel. Jesus starts to broaden his understanding, and maybe he can see God at work at other people than Jewish. He starts to recognize God's work and God's plan in Gentiles as well. So much so, 13 more chapters go by, and this mission is expanding and expanding. And the very last chapter, second to last verse of the entire gospel, do you know what it is? It's after Jesus' passion and after his crucifixion, after his resurrection, and he's back with the disciples giving them one more piece of advice. And here it is. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. The mission had been blown wide open for Jesus. It was to include everyone, all because the boldness of this Canaanite woman who wouldn't take no for an answer. And of course, Jesus' recognition that she might have something to offer, even though it did not line up with his preconceived notions. We look around at the problems that have been going on for so long, and we think, how could we possibly address problems like this? How can we possibly address problems as big as this? The best way, the absolute best way to break this cycle is to listen. That is our first number one priority, is to listen to others. And I don't mean listen to others that have a slightly different political idea than you do. I'm not talking about that. It's a good idea to do. I'm not speaking about that right now. I'm saying listen to people who have a different worldview than you and with whom you disagree. And I'm not saying you have to agree. Please don't understand me. I am not saying that you have to put your own views aside and you have to silence your own views. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying the first step in a dialogue is listening to others, especially those that do not share your worldview. The goal is not for you to agree, and the goal is not for you to be silenced. The goal is to listen. We have lots more in common than we have differences. The Canaanite woman learned that. Jesus, in this passage, learned that. When are we going to learn that? Praise be to God